Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
My name's Chad.
This is Wayne.
I'm mad as hell tonight.
Oh, yeah.
All right, Pat. Let's hear it, finally. Oh, this is Chris, by the way.
So we're getting prepped up here for Gen Con, and obviously we don't run the convention, but we've got a bunch of games we're putting together and things we're organizing. So we decided this week in the prep, we're going to take things kind of easy and just kick out a bonus episode here. And I'll get to what that's going to be about in a second, but I do have two quick and related...
Pat's raging now.
You know
news
what I
pissed? Will only
you know what I hate?
What?
I hate all these podcasts and media places that all they're doing is talking about Gen Con right now. Jesus, yeah. It's like it's the only thing on the planet.
Gen Con. And you know what? After Gen Con's over, that's all you're going to hear about for the next month is how wonderful Gen Con is.
I know.
Well, and that's why we're going to try to keep our Gen Con coverage down to basically just the week of Gen Con.
I'll give you 30 seconds, then I'm busting in.
So here's the two things. First off, during the week of Gen Con, if you are not at the con, or even if you are, at feartheboot.com, we will be posting a bunch
of
blog and video entries to show you guys what we're seeing, the people we're talking to, industry interviews, et cetera, et cetera. Secondly, if you're not signed up for the Toff Bitch Network, get out there and do it. I want to correct a conception. I can't believe Pat's actually
You're wasting time. Go.
The Toff Bitch Network is not something you have to be on all weekend. If you only have time for a couple events.
Next issue.
God, if only you hadn't interrupted yourself.
But there was a misconception about the Toff Bitch Network, which is...
Misconceptions make Pat angry.
If
plus 15.
If you're at the con, you do not have to come to every Toff Bitch event. If you have other things going on, that's the point, is that these guys will blast out a text message. So if you're busy during most of the day Friday, but then Friday night you've got some free time, you get a text message, we're all out somewhere doing board games or getting beer, you can come by and join us.
We're so, there if you need us.
Yes, if you want to stay with the party all weekend, you can. But if you've got tons of other stuff going on, still get signed up on the Toff Bitch Network and join us when you can.
It's freaking Gen Con. There's a lot to do.
And we're doing pretty well. I looked at the numbers earlier today, and we're doing pretty well. So it should be great. All right, Pat.
You know, and I want to give a shout-out to Martian Bob for reserving a spot in the Scooby-Doo game for me, because I want to have the disturbing stories that Chad and my wife have to share. And I will have that after Gen Con.
You know, if I were to relate my disturbing story, it would just be one long continuous beep.
How bad are they doing?
Oh, I was just going to say, I don't know where y'all learned to count, but that 30 seconds has turned into a minute and 45.
You know what I hate? When people are timing while I'm talking.
Yeah, well, you know, I said 30 seconds and then we move on.
This episode is about things.
Feel good.
Yeah.
Getting along.
Catharsis.
Kittens. Yes.
Communication.
Now, this is a bonus episode, right?
Yes.
Is it going to be unedited?
Well, not completely so.
All right.
Yes. When we were starting out, I said, Pat, I was just talking to somebody, was on that trip to Fort Wayne, hang out with some booters, and they said, oh, I just don't get it. I met Pat in person, and he's so talkative, he's so funny, but on the mics, he doesn't say anything. And I'm like, I know.
We asked him
to be a host because at our games, he's one of the most talkative, hilarious people I know. You put a mic in front of his face. You know, everybody has that adjustment period where for the first couple episodes, you get kind of intimidated. But here we are, like, I don't know. It's like the first couple of years. So I said,
he just tried to talk and Dan cut him off.
That's because when he's on this episode, he's a bitch. And so... And I mean that in the prison sense.
Yeah.
And so I said, for this episode, here's how we're going to outline it. Pat, I want you to give me three things that make you angry.
Dan, Chad. I only have one slot. I don't know. Wayne and... All right. Who's going to be? Chris and Wayne. Give me a number between 1 and 69.
68.
I'm going to go 69. I can't lose.
Chris.
I mean, that's like asking what's the number after number one.
The interesting thing about it is, and you're right, anybody that knows me in a more social sense, I think they would be surprised from hearing me on the mics, is I talk a lot more. But what I have noticed in this is it's not that I'm intimidated by the mics. It's that when you're around the mics, it's more of a performance that you're putting on. And I don't want to interrupt the ebb and flow of the conversation. And honestly, I mean, you know, when you listen to these episodes, I'd say it's 80 to 90% Chad and Dan. Hmm. You guys are the driving force behind the conversation. You
That's
guys talk back and
case.
Forth. And so, yeah. And so what happens is you guys are going and you're
no
on a roll.
No wonder we're so successful.
I know. Yeah. And so, handsome too.
And so, you know, it's just like to break into it. It'll stop that flow. So it is sort of like, you know, in a performance, like in a play, if you break in, you might break the magic, so to speak. And that's really more of what it is, as opposed to,
you know, Pat, you should have
being intimidated by
you
the
should
minds.
Have my attitude of it. Screw it, I want
to
talk.
Well, and I know, and I'm trying to overcome that, but it's still hard for me because,
you know what we
and
need.
Also I will. And the other thing is, I grew up in a household where with the attitude of a child is to be seen and not heard. And as my wife can tell you, that is, it's literally the case. So I mean,
I find that when Pat's on the mics, he says a lot when he's prompted to, when you're directed to. And I find that when you're sitting there and you're not saying anything, you're listening intensely.
Mm-hmm.
It's like you're a fan of the show that's on the show.
Sure.
You know, when we very first started this, we had a problem that was we didn't want to talk over each other. So you'd get like somebody who likes to run their mouth like I do, just kind of going and going and going.
No.
And we had to tell people that you have to interrupt. You have to be rude.
It's a belligerent roundtable discussion.
Yes.
If you don't push your way in, you won't be able to talk.
Yeah. And then half the time, I will start to say something, and I just get cut off by Dan.
Well,
so that's the ironic part of it, really, he harps
hold on,
to on,
that
and,
we'll
on
come back to it.
And on about, well, Pat needs to talk more. So I start to say something, and he just,
well,
just
and see,
pulls
that,
right
to
over
to me,
me.
That's you being too polite. Because in a conversation back and forth, when somebody cuts you off, you let them cut
I've
you
decided
off.
I'm just going to start Dan, and that's
wow.
Yeah, but you know, Pat does have a point. There is a
that escalated quick.
Do I have to bleep that in Connecticut?
Most likely. No, Connecticut's probably okay.
There is a social behavior, customs, mm-hmm. habits, whatever you want to call them, courtesies. I don't know when it comes to having
hot
a conversation.
Dishes, I don't know what
and that one person just has to know when to shut the f- up and let somebody else get a word in edgewise.
Yeah,
I'm
yeah,
not
going
to
like
mention names because I want to hurt Dan's
feelings,
and then
I just took my head off.
But you know
off
what I'm talking about.
I didn't listen to him talk. So I have no idea what Chris says. I just keep talking when he's talking.
Yeah.
Was that another Kaiser Wilhelm story, or what was he talking about? So, Pat, on your list of things that make you mad,
mm-hmm.
number
this
one.
This is a short list.
Oh, now,
this is a short example
quick,
of things that make me mad. I have plenty that make me mad.
For anyone that's tuning in for the first time, this is not our usual show flow. If you got a business card from us at Gen Con or something, or checking out the show, go back and check out a prior episode or wait for the next
our
one.
Our slow flow is
remarkable. It is.
How you make flow rhyme with remarkable, I don't know, but Biggie Smalls did it.
Pat, first on your list.
Now, wait a minute. This is not just going to be a plain old rant bile episode. Pat, or all of us, hopefully if this goes right, all of us are going to say a pet peeve of gaming of ours.
Right.
And we're going to listen to it. We're going to let them just spew bile. And then we're going to try and solve the problem.
Yes, we'll try and do a little more than just bitch.
With the intention that in a future bonus episode that we do, people can send us their pet peeves of gaming. We'll read them. And then we'll try and solve those pet peeves. Or at least give a little, console them in their pet peevitude.
So you are going to try to get all huggy at the end of this, are you?
I'm not letting you touch me.
Can I take my shirt off?
Yes.
I'm
definitely not letting you touch
right
me with that.
Pat, GM favoritism. Go.
One of the things that I cannot stand, and actually, and I've seen this with GMs in the past, is literally you've got a group of players around the table, and hopefully that you're all friends, you know, you're all common friends or whatever, but for whatever reason, the GM has like a favorite player, and no matter what game, it goes game from game to game. He has maybe one or two people that are just that he just completely favors, and they're always the spotlight of the game. That spotlight is never shared around the table. It focuses on these one or two people. I can't stand that because it just grates on my nerves. It's ridiculously unfair to everybody else, and it's so blatantly obvious.
And it's
sometimes
ridiculously boring too.
Yes.
Well, yeah, because you've never been one of those players.
No, I actually have been. And that's the other thing. I mean, on the bad side of it is I hate being one of those players because it pisses me off just as bad because I know that there are people sitting around the table that are, you know, either bored out of their skull. Like I've seen situations where there will be players sitting around the table doodling on napkins. I saw my wife, in fact, at one point was so bored, she took a paper towel and she was coloring in the pattern with a pencil. Yeah. She had filled the entire, like a
square paper towel. And the GM at no point picked up on this?
No, no.
The days before cell phone games.
Well, it didn't matter. Didn't care. She wasn't one of the favorite characters. Completely oblivious.
I'm all for shining a spotlight on one character, but you move that spotlight around and then you pull the spotlight back to where it shines on everybody. But like you said, it's tough for the player because they're always on and maybe they don't even notice it. But it's so boring to be in that. I've been in that group before. Mm-hmm. It is so boring.
I've actually been the DM before. I'm guilty of that in some early days of gaming. And I favored not so much a player, but his character. And the players totally called me on it. Even the player whose character was being favored, he got sick of it. And he was we coined the term DMB, which, you know, which you were the DM's buddy. And
I wasn't expecting buddy.
I wasn't either.
it brought back horrible memories, just horrible visions of a horrible band. So, but then we're going to go on.
But they totally they called me on it, and they were absolutely right. I was favoring this character big time, and he was getting way more than he should, in game benefits, all that kind of stuff. And the only reason I was even doing that in the first place is because I liked his character and I liked his concept. And I really wanted to run with it, but my inexperience in doing that, I approached it from the wrong way. And I ended up kind of really ruining that character because of what I was doing to it.
Yes, Dan, I see you're just faunching at the bit.
Dan, you never talk. Why don't you say something?
Thank you, Pat. Thank you for giving me this opportunity to speak. I've played under GMs who do this because of one of a number of reasons. They're inexperienced. They really shouldn't be GMing to begin with. There could be some reason for the favoritism. There's somebody who's new to the group that they're trying to coddle. There's somebody at the group they're trying to get in bed. It's the one girl and they just don't know how to act on a girl. I mean, I've seen this. It's stereotypical and sad, but I've seen it.
Maybe they're just relying on one player more because that player's putting extra effort in.
Or it's their best buddy. They just are used to clicking with that person or not used to clicking with the rest of the group. Who knows what the reason is? But I will say sometimes it's the player's fault, and here's why. Not all the time. But I have run games before where I had players bitch to me, you're putting the spotlight on so-and-so. I said, yeah, it's because he's the only guy who gave me anything to work with. You guys all gave me these boring-ass vanilla characters with no background hooks, nothing I can use in the plot. He's the only guy here that's actually playing a character as opposed to some vaguely generic stat block. It's like, what do you want me to do? I mean, he's got all this history with politics and culture and his family and his long-lost brother and... You're the cleric.
And your name is Claire Rickson.
McKeeler. It's like, where do you want me to go with this?
I'm so using that name at some point.
It's like, Claire Erickson? Yeah.
You know, every time you guys bitch about names, I get a new name for a character in an MMO.
Yeah.
I have had a fight or I have had cleric.
We talk about horrible gaming traits. You get ideas, and you wonder why when we get down to what makes you mad is people don't take your ideas seriously.
Hey, my ideas get used in MMOs, not in game.
Oh, my.
So, Pat, you've got to have an example of this. Outside, I mean, is the only one you've got the time your wife was coloring in a paper towel, which is in and of itself pretty impressive. Yeah. I mean, you gave me a paper towel and said, color this in. I don't know how. It would take me hours to do.
Honestly, I mean, as a GM, I try... At least I think I try to kind of take stock of the sort of emotional level of the room. If people are playing on their phones, if people are dicking around, then that means I'm doing something wrong. I need to grab people's attention. Either I'm focusing on one person or I'm being boring or there's too much table talk. As a game master, I need to do something to pull the attention.
And that's what I don't get. It's like any creative endeavor, you need some amount of objectivity. You need to be able to recognize...
Well, it's never my fault.
You're screwing something up.
It's everybody else that's not paying attention. I'm just grabbing the attention.
Yeah, you just have to do something extra.
Yes, exactly.
How do you run a game where somebody at the table has colored in a sheet of bounty and it does not occur to you they might be bored?
Well, what do you do?
Or you just don't care.
Yeah.
That's the worst part of it. Yeah. It's maybe you see it and you're like, okay, I don't care. It's not my favorite, so whatever.
Yeah.
And you're
talking about just being
I think, you know, it's just, you know, some other examples would fall along that is just like you've got a character, maybe one of these people, they try to do things like they even have a good background. They've got an interesting character. And it's just that, well, you know what? Maybe you're not one of my favorites around the table. So even though you've got a couple page background or you've got some really interesting hooks, I just don't care about that character because it's not one of the beautiful people.
I've seen that sort of attitude before where it's not the game master or the other players. It's the game master's running a good game. All the players except one are into it. And that other person is the token girlfriend or the friend who's not into role playing, but has this group of friends and just wants to hang out, but knows enough not to bother or disturb the game. So they're sitting there doodling or writing or whatever, vaguely paying attention to the story. So, I mean, there's not much you can do with that. Personally, I would just rather those people not show up to the game. But I guess as long as they're being unobtrusive and they actually want to be there.
On the flip side of that, I've seen players that have been in these situations where they try their best to do something with these characters. And it's amazing that they'll say, okay, well, I'm going to go in whatever situation, they'll say, okay, I'm going to try to go do this. And they even try to be creative about it. And, you know, then the GM will just sort of look at them offhandedly and sort of shoot them down. And it's like they fail just because, you know, it's almost like they pick up the die. And as it's in mid roll, they say, you fail before it even hits the table kind of thing. And then you've got one of the favorites over here that can do no wrong.
I do.
It's like, you know, it's like it's people. You've got this guy who he doesn't even it's like he kind of looks over at his favorite and he sees that the guy's about to, he doesn't even like finish what his idea is and like, yes, and you did it and you succeed and you're awesome.
I do the midair dice roll call thing all the time because people come at me with absolutely ludicrous suggestions and I do it to demonstrate how ludicrous the suggestion is. Like, I'm thinking of a target number here. Now roll a d20 to see if you get it, and it's a midair. No, you don't get it, because there's no freaking way that you can do this.
The only time I ever do this is when I'm really pissed off at my players, when they've done something that just aggravates me. It's like they're trying to purposely either stall the game, or they're just being rules jerkwads, and it's like, oh yeah, okay, go ahead, fine, just try it. Oh, you failed. Too bad.
You guys are dicks.
But you know, I was going to say, though, sometimes the GM inadvertently can fall into that habit without even realizing it if the player is a dominating player and just keeps, you know, grabbing the attention of the GM, and the GM isn't, you know, hip enough to realize what's going on. He kind of gets sucked into what that player wants to do and then inadvertently starts ignoring everybody else.
I think that a GM who is like that, who has a dominant player and they're maybe not a dominant type of person.
Anyone running a game for you?
I think that what the GM can do is when he notices that going on, he says, okay, stop. And then he just does a round table. And he starts with the person to the left of him and goes, Dan, what are you doing? Okay, Pat, you're the dominant player here. And he doesn't say this. What are you doing? And then the guy's like, blah, 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 blah. And it's like, okay, stop. That's fine. That's all you're doing. Wayne, what are you doing? Chris, what are you doing?
And I've seen Dan do this to you too.
Oh yeah, totally. It's you have to. I can talk and talk and talk and not ever stop. It's it's just how I am.
Chris, you've got something that this is not a pet peeve, but this is something you're trying to unravel right now. You're trying to figure out, which is you are trying to translate Left 4 Dead into a role playing. Now, if we look at Fear the Con over its history, some of the most popular games have been RPG adaptations of IPs, intellectual properties that really do not seem to make sense in a role playing game. Scooby Thulu. It's
perfect.
What the hell have we had? I mean, we've had Zelda.
Mega Man, Zelda.
Yeah, I mean, it's just the most random stuff. And Chris.
Mother. That was an awesome one.
You are trying right now to do that with Left 4 Dead. And of course, Left 4 Dead is a fun game. But let's be honest, it's just a mindless shooter. I mean, okay, I realize there's some neat social aspects or a certain amount of tactics to it, but you just walk through a level grinding out zombies. That's not a very fun role-playing game.
No, you're absolutely right. It's not. And that's really kind of where the challenge is. And because you're absolutely right. You do nothing but just run through and shoot things. And it's one of the most base FPS games that you can do. But yet at the same time, they built such a nice story around it or an implied story. And the setting itself with the visuals also really adds a lot to it. And me as a tabletop gamer playing this game, I look at that and I think there's got to be potential here somewhere. However, you know, that said, sitting down trying to actually translate that is very difficult. And, you know, I'm kind of faced with two approaches because the event that I'm doing is a con event. I know, but it could just as very well be a one-shot event, too, with friends. And so when you sit down with that mentality, it's like, okay, you know, you're not going to get into deep immersive role-playing within 4 hours, you know. But at the same time, you do want to try just to avoid a grind, because what's the point of sitting there and just grinding and rolling dice for 4 hours? That's not necessarily fun either. So, but when it comes to a video game property that people have played and have a certain level of expectation, you have to try and recreate aspects of that game as much as possible. And that's kind of where the rub is for me, because trying to modify the rules to recreate some of the things that you see in the game so that you can do things that you do in the game at the tabletop. But yet at the same time, because your players are sitting around and they know that they're in a tabletop RPG and they have that mentality, they're going to want story elements to grab onto, and they're going to want to do character development because there's going to be that opportunity. You know, and so you have to provide some RP elements in here. But this is a very fast-paced game, so in this particular type of setting, being a one-shot event, you've got to try and keep that fast pace, but yet still provide some RP. And so it's an interesting problem slash challenge, you know, that I'm dealing with in trying to make this work. And, you know, we'll see. I mean, I have an idea of how it's generally going to work. I've kind of got it mentally sketched out, and of course I got my notes and everything, but going into this, I'm not 100% sure how well this is really going to work.
Well, you know what makes it harder for you, I think, Chris, too, is this game has, it does have such a deep story, but it's so subtle.
Yeah,
you
have it's to, all implied.
Yeah, you have yes. to read it. It's implied, or it's given by characters.
It's a story told and in how, graffiti and one-liners. It's yeah. not told in exposition.
And how are you going right. to tell that story when the people that would be giving the one-liners are your players?
And the graffiti and the one-liners are contradictory. Because it's people who don't necessarily know, and they're just writing or saying what they know.
Chris, where I would start this is with what won't work in an RPG. And let's take the combat as an example.
Roll, you hit, pull yeah. model. Roll, you hit, pull model. Roll, you hit, you missed.
An endless grinding against millions and millions of zombies is fun in a first-person shooter. It's not going to be fun in an RPG. But I think there are things you can do, for example, to adapt that somewhat to an RPG, and that, for example, you can take the rules and simplify it down to, look, any damage kills a zombie. If they pop up, if you so much as do anything to them, at least your basic zombies, I mean, I realize you got your special infected, but your basic zombies are going to drop dead.
Common infected.
I'm sorry, common yes, infected. The common infected are going yes. to drop dead.
You know, and I would argue you don't even need to roll for most of your common infected. If you're basing it on a story and interactions, then have them just say, okay, here come three common infected. Okay, you guys can just shoot them. You don't think you need to roll for every common infected. Just keep throwing waves at them to keep them moving, but you don't need the mechanics for all of it.
And I think that you, both of you, are actually onto something in the sense that there are times when just shooting a couple zombies, like Wayne said, that's part of the story element to move things forward, to remind them that there are still these infected still walking around, that they're not walking down a street that's completely empty. But when you get into a horde situation, you know, then maybe there's some general rolling involved, yeah. but just the fact that you're shooting equates to death in the case of those zombies. Now, of course, you know, you got the specials, boomed, and that's something else.
You need to roll for it. You know, if you get boomed and you get a horde coming in, there needs to be some rolling there. There needs to be a consequence to getting boomed, but not just walking around.
I think any way you crack it, at some point you're going to have to diverge at least from the general gameplay, and that a role-playing game, at least the way we play them, is about character and about narrative. And that's something that, while it may be implied to some degree in Left 4 Dead, is not what the game is about. Yeah, I think what I would compare this to is there's a concept in music called variations on a theme. Probably the closest metaphor for this, I guess, within pop music would be the remix. That you take an idea or a theme or a melody and you find different ways of applying it, yet it's still recognizable to the consumer as having descended from this or that. And I think that's what you have to shoot for with this, because since I think we at least all seem to be in general agreement, you cannot recreate the first person shooter and still have it fun as a role playing game. But you can say, OK, what are the things that made it great? The implied setting. OK, you can't have graffiti on the walls per se. I guess you could, but you can't.
There's some, but it can't be ever present.
But exactly. But you could have other implied stories. I mean, for example, you could have something like, I don't know, they go into a subway and you see some corpses arranged in such ways it looks like they were trying to escape the subway car. Yet you don't see any sign of infected around here. And so you
well,
turn
there's
around,
a There's an interesting
what happened here. But then you find some guy with like crazy propaganda pamphlets and an Uzi, and all of a sudden you realize that he shot everybody just freaking out.
Well, there's an interesting one in Left 4 Dead 2 where you're at this bus station and you can tell where CETA, which is like the sort of it's the analogous to the CDC. They're trying to get people out. Of course, everybody's gone. So they're trying to get people out of these buses, and you go through this whole thing. And if you go to this side room and look through this doorway, there's tons and tons and tons of luggage just thrown in there, but there's no people. So, I mean, it's this sort of thing. Where did the people go? Why is their luggage here? Why are their bodies stacked up here? You know, everybody became infected while they were trying to organize people so that they can escape. There was some sort of thing that happened that where people became infected and they started gunning them down and that sort of thing.
So, and I'm not really giving necessarily any spoilers away by talking about this, but what I ended up doing was all the characters are pre-generated. And so each survivor certainly has a little bit of a backstory, and there's information in there about what this character thinks, what this character suspects about things, and kind of their view since the infection came. And as with anything, any campaign in Left 4 Dead, the idea is to get from point A to point B and survive, and then in point B you get to escape. And so this is no different. And so it's the process to get there, but each character is in some certain way tied to each chapter, because the video game is done in chapters, and so each chapter in the tabletop is kind of tied to a certain character, where each character has something that's relevant to what they're going through, so that there is some sort of attachment and motivation for them to get through there, because obviously you cannot also recreate the map to drive them to where they go, because if you say to a bunch of players, this area looks completely impassable, or you've got, in the video game, you've got trucks blocking the road. Well, RPG, of course, you can get around those trucks. Yeah. In a video game, you can't, but the RPG, you can, so you've got
game,
to...
There's like a tractor trailer, and there's a 4-foot clearing that you could walk under, except your character is not allowed to crouch that low and right. walk under it. You have to take the long way around through the dangerous infected warehouse.
Right. And so by tying essentially where they are and where they need to be next to the character's motivations, that's how I got around that problem, to kind of get them to where they need to be at each stage.
And that's another example, something that I think translates very well from the video game to the tabletop, which is the fact that each of the characters, despite not having a huge amount of character development, does have a lot of things that make them easily recognizable individuals. And
they
don't
have a lot of character development, but they have a lot of personality.
Well, especially for one shot, I mean, that's great, because these are characters that you can describe and have somebody then go on to play out in just a few sentences.
Well, that too, I think that's something you can use from the game, from the very first map. These characters didn't know each other. So if you're using that in their game, you can do basically like they do in the first map. You start them off, you explain what the characters look like, nobody knows each other's names, and you put them in that situation right out of the gate, running, and then they have to introduce themselves to each other after you've already gone through the first big scene.
And you have a great skip there, in that you don't have to have any kind of group template or...
We're together because we don't want to be eaten.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You're only together because you don't want to be eaten. And for the course of a one-shotter, that's perfectly sufficient. I mean, you're not going to reach a point in the course of a one-shotter where the group's going to fall apart. And if you do, that just makes for an interesting ending.
Mm-hmm. I know the hardest thing for me on a one-shot is starting it off. And I think you've got a great opportunity if you do something like that. Start it off right in the action and then make them introduce themselves to each other after they get past the first major hurdle.
So, Pat, what's the second thing that makes you mad?
This last conversation, actually, this whole thing's pissed me off. I've been sitting here beside myself the whole time listening to you guys talk about, Left 4 Dead. You guys play Left 4 Dead for like hours on end at night, every single night.
And then you're going to come
and you want to go to your role-playing group, play Left 4 Dead as a one-shotter? I just don't get it. Jesus Christ, people. I mean, come on.
Pat,
a little variety, maybe?
I only have 320 hours logged in Left 4 Dead.
Okay, I don't know who's going to start working on it, but whenever you guys do work the RPG, count me the fuck out, okay? That's all I'm saying.
That wasn't even on his list. His rage is building.
It is. Maybe you should play some Left 4 Dead and kind of get that rage out.
Absolutely.
I'm sure I'll go role play it somewhere. It's the next big thing, apparently.
You'll be play testing in the van on the way to Gen Con. That's what you'll be doing, mister.
I don't know if I want the guy right behind the wheel play testing it, Chris.
I'm going to go next.
That pisses me off too.
Why does that piss you off, Pat?
It just does.
As if he doesn't go first enough.
I know.
Go
you
next
know?
Enough. Yeah.
Come on. Get going.
GMs that screw you. Now, I got two sub concepts here. One is just really one that I'm going to kind of stand on its own. The other's kind
of. Oh, so this isn't about having a hot chick for a GM?
No.
That wouldn't piss me off. What Wait a minute. Hold on. It depends on the GM, I guess.
And then the second one will actually tie into something Pat wants to talk about. The first one.
We probably won't get to it, though. We'll go long. I'll come back to
right,
the next
fine.
Time.
We'll start right there. So if I don't get to my point, that's what we'll get to in some future episode.
I like the sound of that.
Pat.
We come to a turning point.
This is the new Fear the Boot.
That's right.
The Fear the Boot where Dan gets interrupted. A lot. Chris is like, yes!
Yeah.
Yes!
But that already happens. A new Fear the Boot would be if you get interrupted, Chad.
That's true.
Do you honestly believe that will ever happen?
No.
I try.
The
I
new
try
Fear
so
the Boot
hard.
Where Chad is subtle and diplomatic.
What?
And cares about feelings.
So you got
and
a new
has a
guy
nice
named
scar
Chad?
On his forehead about yay. There, you know.
Yeah.
Pat. It
yes.
pisses both of us off when the GM screws you out of results.
It really does. You know, the classic points that I see in this is you're going along, you know, the GM has got the story. You talk about
Bards and Gnolls, I swear I'm coming right across this table.
Ew. Go on.
But I really like along, Bards and Gnolls.
You know, you get to whatever, you get to some say like a major plot point. You're coming up against the, you know, the Baron Von Badass of the campaign. And you as a group collectively get together, you knock your heads together, and you come up with a pretty damn good plan. Pretty creative. Maybe something outside the box to use some of this
yes.
PC terminology bull that's floating around all over the place nowadays anyway. And so you throw this out there and, you know, and it's like, oh, it's just it's an amazing thing. It's like, boom, it's going to totally destroy or it's going to circumnavigate whatever the guy had planned for you. And he just sits there and he stutters for a second.
Yeah, Magellan, the GM.
And then the best thing he can come up with is like, no, I'm sorry. It didn't work. And yes. it's just like it's not even creative
well, what,
enough to, you know,
what level
to pull out
are we
that, you know.
Are we talking about doing something creative? Are we talking about outright stunting? Are we talking about casting the grease spell on the Viking longboat and sending it out?
You know what pisses
hey,
me off?
Hey, that's cool.
When we do
this,
no, it's
it.
Not cool.
Well, I don't know. I didn't know what you're talking about. Yeah. But you come up with interesting ways of, you know, in, you know,
right, here's
very creative ways to do things in the game. And it's obvious that yeah. this is something that he didn't plan for. You just couldn't have.
Yes.
There's no way you could have.
Mm-hmm.
But that's genius. You came up with it. You roll with it because it's awesome.
Bingo. I am not in favor of, choose your phrase, Chad, stunting,
right.
rules lawyering.
Doing, yeah, that's not what I'm talking
doing
about.
Doing something.
Here.
We're not talking
using
about
the letter of the law.
Outrageous.
Yeah, we're not talking about using the letter of the law to defeat the spirit of the law. We're talking about the fact that, look, the GM's a limited human being.
Sure.
And the player's just plain thought of something he didn't think
yeah,
of.
We're talking some full-on MacGyver shit. Here, man.
Yeah, exactly. That you threw a challenge at them and they didn't cheat. They're not rules lawyering. They're not screwing the game. They're not doing anything they shouldn't be doing. They just thought of something the GM didn't. They beat an encounter in a way the GM didn't expect, or maybe an encounter wasn't meant to be beaten at all. And the GM breaks down because he can't handle it.
Well,
and I've been in that game.
Yeah, and disallows it because he's got some pie in the sky thing, some soliloquy thing that he's going to be pulling mm-hmm. out here. He's got to make the big speech or whatever that he's had planned. And that's the way this encounter is going to be. And so he does it.
Fear the con. I played
this
it.
Guy had aliens invade a planet that is over 70% water and they can't handle water. And they're shocked when somebody starts throwing glasses of it at the aliens. That's the kind of thing I'm talking about.
Yeah.
So I was at a Fear the Con game with Inder Melchior, and he was running a homeworld game or a mother game, whichever way you want to go about it. And he had the big bad appear at the end, and he appeared in front of all of us, and he started making a speech. And before he got two words into the speech, I'm like, well, wait a minute. I want to kick him in the junk. And Ed's like, but he's making a speech. And I'm like, he's 3 feet away. I walk up to him and I kick him in the junk. And Ed's like, okay, roll for it. And my character actually had a kung fu kicking skill that I rolled on, and it was like this massive, huge roll, and I ended this speech right then and there. We did not get a speech.
Thank God.
You know, that's reasonable, but what I hate is the other side of this coin. When one of the players comes up with a plan that's so outrageous and ridiculous that it should never work.
Yeah.
But the GM gives him the rolls and it all comes out. You're left sitting there thinking, how did that possibly happen?
Yeah.
It
breaks your immersion.
Yeah, my whole night is just kind of blown here. What the hell just happened?
The game is of a certain level of reality, but the rules allow... I think this gets back into stunting.
If it happens every week, it's one thing. If it's just... If it happens one week and you're not used to it, it really kills your immersion.
So we had a little bit of a pre-discussion where we talked about this, and I gave this example to the guys. So if it sounds like I'm retreading or being stated, whatever. But
I hate retreading.
I know. But the way I look at it, too, is from a GM perspective of, say, I have this encounter, and I have X amount of content planned for tonight. You know, some combat, some story, some whatever. And that's going to take up 4 hours, and our gaming session lasts 4 hours. And a good chunk of that is, we'll say, this combat. And like the guy's current game, they're trying to escape from this military encampment, and they're rescuing this guy, and they were stopped by these elite sort of shock trooper gnolls. And I have it kind of planned as this big encounter, and it's going to take up X amount of time within the game that I have planned for the content. Now, I'm an ad-lib GM, so I would just keep going with it if they did this. But what can happen is they look at that and they're like, okay, it's these gnolls. They're positioned here. They have this. This is going to be a really hard fight. We can do it. It's going to be challenging. And then Pat's like, you know what? I whip out the scroll and I cast Fireball. Okay. And then you start rolling. It's like, boom, 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 boom. Every single one of the guys I was throwing against you is dead. Completely, utterly dead by the rules. And it's just like, say I'm not an ad-lib GM and I only have X amount planned out for tonight, and that was a pretty big chunk of it. Well, suddenly we've gone from this 4 or 5 hour game to an hour and a half game. Congratulations, you've won the ability to go home early. Is that
and
the
play GM? Left 4 Dead.
And play Left 4 Dead, which is a win-win for me. But you know, I think that there should be some consideration on the player's part. I think that the GM shouldn't take it away. If he allows that to happen, he shouldn't take that away from him. Say you whip out the fireball, and it's like, Chad, I want to burn up this fireball spell and just nail him. Okay, let's see how it rolls out. And the GM's like, oh, well, they've just killed my entire counter. You know what? They all had rings of fire resistance, so nothing happens.
Yeah, that's the kind of shit I'm talking
BS.
About. That's what happens.
That is total BS.
That's what I've come across.
Now, I think it's totally fair for the GM to look at the player, kind of see where this is going, and say, do you mind not doing that? In fact, I tell you what. I pull him aside. I'll give you a consideration on X if you don't do that and you fight this out. And if the player is down with that, then I think that's a good way to proceed.
Let me give you a cynical take on that and a more humanitarian take on it. My cynical take on it, that's bad GMing. If there is one encounter that has to take 2 hours, and if they thought of a legitimate way around it, and they're not screwing your plot or whatever, you as a GM were hinging that on the presumption that they couldn't figure something out for a certain amount of time. I mean, that's just overly restrictive writing. I mean, I think the GM should have enough alternate plot points, or maybe write more than he thinks he's going to need so that the knight will carry through all the way or something like that. But having said that, the humanitarian side of it, if the GM said, okay, I am just going to admit, I'm not going to cheat you. I'm not going to screw you. I am just going to flat out admit, as a human being, I didn't think of that.
Yeah.
It just did not occur to me.
You guys blew me away. Awesome.
Yeah.
Good for you guys. But
you guys ended the horror movie by shooting Freddy Krueger in the head.
Not splitting up, not taking your shirt off.
Exactly. And the GM said that to me, I'd back down.
Yeah.
I'd say, look, okay, we got you. We beat you. But at the same time, look, I'm asking the GM to give some breaks to me when I screw up. The point of this is for us to tell a good story together, blah, blah, blah. I may not be super happy about it. I may be like, you know, well, okay, then what was the point of us figuring that out? But would still come back from the break.
On the other hand, too, I think the GM can say, it's like, well, I had this really, really cool encounter for you guys where it was more than just dice rolling and fighting. It's like, do you mind if we do that encounter instead? I don't know. I mean, there is a certain lame factor to that.
Yeah, and that's my problem with that. You know, you talk about pulling you out of immersion. That, to me, it just breaks it. You know, just shatters it for me. And I say, you just let it stand. I mean, like you're saying, and I'm talking more of along the lines of something that's really creative. Like it was it was a great cooperative effort by the group, not just me pulling out like a fireball. And in our situation, I think what, you know, may not be coming across the audience is that my character has this ability to use, you know, a couple chips to really pull out some like
spells you shouldn't be able to do.
Some god level type destruction. Mm-hmm. Let's put it that way.
Right.
And yes, that could do it. But I would be reticent to do that, to be honest with you. I don't think it should be just the one guy does some crazy thing, or maybe it is, though. But it's, you know, more of a cooperative effort. I say let it stand. And I agree with what Dan was saying. I think what you need to do is have enough plot arced out in your head that if that happens, what you can do with some of the remainder of the time, maybe not the full 4 hours, but you go on with more plot.
Right.
You know, it's not about the combat. Okay, that's done. But, well, there's the next plot points down the road that we can role play out. And maybe it'll only take another hour, but at least now we've got 2.5 to 3 hours in there, and we'll have some downtime, and whatever, you know. And I know not everybody does it. Maybe they just have enough for that night. But I would say don't do it that way.
Yeah.
Plan ahead.
I've seen GMs run out of material.
It's like chess. Just do it. Approach it like chess. Be thinking 3 sessions ahead. Have 3 sessions of material lined out so that you can go to that well if you need to.
I don't.
Well, on the other side of the perspective there, the player could do something so out there that it just doesn't fall with whatever you had planned. And yes, that is a failing of your planning, but sometimes players just come up with these things that you're left shaking your head. Where did that come from?
Yeah.
And your whole story is now going left when you were not even imagining that.
And that's awesome. I mean, we talk about this is sort of a cooperative storytelling thing.
Yeah, that's the joy of GMing.
Yeah, exactly. That's not a bad thing. I mean, that's great for a GM because, hey, all of a sudden, holy crap, you know, I've just experienced something that I didn't even think of. And it was like, wow, that's
if your players never surprise you, you have a boring group.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, the joy of GMing to me is being surprised. Wayne, we're going to cut to you for the next one. Because you have something that I know really bugged you in one of our previous campaigns.
Yeah, we're going to go back. We're going to start off with the revolving GM campaign.
That pissed me off, too.
Why did that piss you off, Pat?
It just did. I didn't like that. I really didn't like that campaign. It just, there's something about it.
The revolving GM thing has been.
It was a good idea.
It's been successful in the past.
It is a well of bad examples for me to use on this podcast. So for nothing else, I love it for that. Okay, in this case, I have this character.
Well,
let's
start with the basic thesis here. Okay. Your beef is GMs and players both not taking your character concept or your character seriously at all.
Right. So in this case, my character started off as a fairly dumb character. That was my goal. I wanted to play a character. I mean, he wasn't like really dumb, but he wasn't as smart as anyone else in the group.
Was his name Wyatt Derp?
Actually, his name was Marcus Cole. But anyway, the character had not been around magic. So these other characters in the party have magic, and he's watching this. So he takes it upon himself to try to better himself. He grabs a book while they're in a magic school, and he's trying to read up to understand what's happening around him.
But he can't read because he's so dumb.
He wasn't that dumb. This is the problem here. Except Chad's character wasn't the problem in that campaign. Everyone took the concept of, okay, he's trying to read this book. How cute. And from the GM telling me...
He's trying to read.
Yeah, the GM tells me, okay, chapter one is...
He thinks he's people.
It's Cleric's first book. Aww.
Actually, it was Magic for Dummies is what it ended up being.
I remember that.
Called.
It was great.
And it's like, chapter one, some people have magic. It's like, why would someone in a magic school even have this book sitting there? He's trying to understand what's going on around him. I'm trying to, in character, explain why my next stat point was bumping my intelligence up. And every time I turn around, someone's making a joke about it. Whether it be the GM telling me, you know, here's what you read in this chapter. And it being something just so ridiculously stupid. Or the, aw, it's cute, he's trying to read. We'll humor him. Other people have had this too. You want to explore this aspect of your character, and no one else wants to play in on this. Maybe they don't realize that this is actually what you're wanting to do with it, and that you're not joking, or maybe it's just they think it's a dumb idea.
Or with me, I've had it before where I'm exploring an aspect of a character, and people think I'm taking it too far. In the Skies of Glass campaign, a little bit, where my character was an evil asshole, and people are like, wow, your character's an evil asshole, you need to tone that back. I'm like,
Maybe you should stop eating Mexican food.
No, I'm...
Such is, not has.
Yeah. And I'm like, no, that's just it. It's in character. He's a jerk.
I've seen what Wayne's describing from two angles. One is I have played characters, and this is a beef of mine, where I specifically set out to play the character to explore certain concepts. I sat down, communicated them very clearly to the GM. Everything fit within the group template. This was no screw up on my part. And I have screwed up plenty of things, but in some of these cases, there was no screw up on my part. And when we got to the game, the GM just plain did not ever engage what I was trying to do. In fact, at times when I would try and explore those concepts, he would go out of his way to block those things from happening. But I've also seen Wayne, more you're describing here, of there's a character I've come up with, and there's some things that I think are neat or interesting, and instead they've become sort of group-wide inside jokes.
Yeah.
And every time my character sets out to do anything, and to me this is not meant to be comedy, and I may recognize that, okay, there is some tee-hee table humor to it, but this is not supposed to be a recurring joke. But every time my character speaks up or tries to do something, the whole group just laughs, make fun of it, and then changes the subject.
Yeah, and it's so frustrating because you're wanting to make the character better. I had this at times in the Epoch of Prisos game, too, where I wanted something with the character, but, oh, he's just the alien.
You know, I think what you need to do in this kind of situation, if you're
Man up.
Yeah, yeah. You need to grow a pair, first of all. You need to go get them back from whatever purse they're stored in. You know, find a good doc, get them reattached. No, but seriously, I think what you...
What's more serious than that?
You know what's funny about this is before the episode, I'm like, Pat, I want you to give me three things that make you mad. So he gives me two and says, hang on, I have to call my wife and find out what else makes me mad.
Which should make you mad right there.
Yeah. That's a good
that
one, honey.
That does piss me off. God damn it.
Hey, if anyone knows honey, about having to go get your balls back from someone, it's Pat.
But anyway, no, but I think if you're coming up in a situation like this where it's sort of disruptive around the game table or whatever, I think you need to pull the GM aside and talk to him and say, hey, this is something that I want to take more seriously and do this. And then beyond that, maybe what you need to do is keep it more of a, you still do it, but your character doesn't have to announce it in front of the whole group. You know, you don't have to say it at the table. Slip them a note, write a note, do that way. But that way you're still doing it, you're still exploring it, but then it avoid, and this is just, again, this is avoidance as opposed to fixing the problem. But if you've got that situation and it's always that way, just go around it that way.
You know, that's why I'm glad we did the revolving GM game, because there were so many different people running. I've got to play under different people, but all of the things we talk about communication, we didn't do any of that in that game because we kept thinking, okay, in a couple of weeks, we're going to have a different GM, and then this problem's going to go away. So I have all this material to rant about, and this is just one of those topics.
Yeah, just you're releasing that game just to wait any problem out. I'm going to give this a both and in terms of my view on the solution. On the one hand, look, the players need to respect each other, and sometimes they may not know. So the player who's got the characters not being taken seriously, I think, needs to communicate clearly, number one, what it is they want out of playing that character. And number two, when the jokes have reached a point where it is destroying their experience. And on the flip side, the other players around the table need to be receptive to that. That if somebody came in this game wanting to do something, the GM and the players ought to make some reasonable attempt to accommodate it. Now, sometimes there are times that a guy just brings a stupid concept to the table. You just can't take it seriously because it's so dumb.
Would you say the concept would be mock-worthy? I mean, that's kind of mean, but it's how it plays out.
Yeah, honestly, sometimes... That was not the case.
It was absolutely ludicrous, and it was mock-worthy.
Yeah, and that was not the case, I don't think, in either of Wayne's characters that he's giving. Both those character concepts were fine. But I have seen some people where they just bring an idea to the table that is just so stupid. Tim's character with a freaking letter L that fell. I'm a security guard at a college. Okay, that's a fine character concept. Who has military-grade cybernetics? What? And he's specifically missing two legs and his left arm.
Yeah.
Was he walking under a marquee and a great big letter L fell on him from 200 feet? I mean, how did this happen?
I think that's up to the other players to say something then. This part of that character bothers me. This is going to hate my immersion. Do it right in the beginning when you're building your group template. Otherwise, you have a group template failure.
Yeah, I agree. And just mocking the character during the game is just passive aggression. I mean, it's really not.
That's so fun.
I'm not saying it isn't, but it's just not the right way of resolving
it.
And that's, once again, I give it a both and. On one hand, the people need to know this is what the guy wants out of it. we're going to try and accommodate that. On the flip side, the person with the idea needs to both communicate what they want out of it and possibly be willing to take some feedback that, look, dude, I understand you want to try and play out A, B, and C, but D, E, and F is just really stupid.
Damn it, Dan, a four-arm cyborg is not a dumb concept.
And yeah, maybe there's a
question. It was the whole concept.
Well, and that's maybe where you ask the question.
Big hit at parties.
And this is something that I really only developed as a social skill, I guess, later in my gaming career, is you stop and say, wait, this is ridiculous. What are you trying to get out of this character? Yeah. You ask the guy, I mean, I can't give you this. This is just
ambidextrous four-wielding pistols.
But what are you trying to get out of this? Maybe we can find some other way to get you there.
As a game master, you'd even turn it into a give and take. You can say, well, you want this dumb concept. Of course, you don't frame it like this. It's like, you want this dumb concept that is really only there to get you the +2 kilomatic ray. What are you willing to give me? I want a deeper character. No, not a handy pat.
Oh, okay.
I want some personality. I want some story hooks. If you give me this, I'll give you the +2 kilomatic, because quite frankly, I don't care if you have the +2 kilomatic, because that means the mooks that are coming at you are going to have +3 kilomatics.
Well, Chad, this is where, for a moment here, I'm going to stroke your ego.
Oh, yeah. Sir? Not a handy pat.
Ego. He said ego.
I don't care what he names it.
Hey, whatever you want to call him, man, it's fine with pat.
Several years ago, you sat down and did something of a gaming social experiment, mm-hmm. where you said, what I'm going to do is I'm going to take and write out all of the worst stereotype character mm-hmm. concepts in the world, and I'm going to make a good character out of it. Mm-hmm. I'm going to play a guy who's an arena pit fighter, who has one cybernetic arm, one cybernetic eye, carries a shotgun.
His parents were killed.
His parents were killed. His fiance was killed. And he's out for revenge against the guy that did it.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, I'm going to start with that as my basic concept and actually develop this into a good character mm-hmm. and not stop there. And I think
I really enjoyed playing that character.
It was a fantastic character. And I think what that illustrates, you can get somebody and say, look, what is it you're trying to get out of this?
Mm-hmm.
And oftentimes, no matter how absurd the starting point is, you can still get somewhere decent with enough work on the concept.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this was, of course, something you were doing by yourself. But I think this is something that you could just as easily do with a GM and a player, or the whole group trying to help the player get where they want to go without having the absurdity along the way.
And get what you want out of it as a GM, too.
Pat, for our closer, for our little nightcap here, we're going to hit on something. This was your third thing that makes you angry. Actually, it was your second, but we did two of them out of order.
Obviously. Guess what? That pisses me off, too. We went out of order. I had it lined out very well, very logically, and very
clear. I'm the only person here with any notes, and it's notes written in pen on the back of an actual outline for an actual episode.
It was lined out in his wife's head when he called her.
You have a plastic bottle cap in front of you. Do you have notes on that?
Yeah, I do.
It's like microfiche in there somewhere.
Uh-huh.
So, all right. So, Pat, what is your other thing that makes you mad?
I don't remember. Jesus Christ. I've been so many things. It's totally out of order.
On the phone.
There have been 5 or 6 different things that have pissed me off tonight. How am I supposed to know?
You had this great mnemonic worked out and we wrecked the whole thing. All right. So, Pat, I'll go ahead and tell you for you.
You don't have to call your wife this time.
This is one that, Pat, you said, well, I'll just let you introduce it, and then I'll give you my thoughts on it. People that mispronounce words.
Oh, my God. You know, It's just
nuclear.
Yeah, that's got to be the.
It's pronounced nuclear.
Nuclear.
Nuclear. My biggest. That's probably the one, and that is the word that's the shining example of
shining example.
Of mispronunciation of words is
I
nuclear.
Love that book.
Oh my God! But yeah, you know. And we've actually had this in every once in a while it'll come up in an episode. One of my favorites, if you would call it that, is archetype. I think that's how you call it.
Archetype.
It's an archetype. It's not, or an arch. I even heard you call it like an archetype. It's an archetype.
Yeah. But, well, kiss my ass.
I know. Okay. I will.
I know. And I'll like
it.
Wow.
Okay. Now it's Chad dropping trow.
So here's my comment on that. This is one of the things I find fascinating about geek culture in general, and not all geeks.
Pedantic. waffles. Love you.
Don't. Yeah, I'm not even.
Let's get into a whole drow debate.
Kraken Kraken was my favorite.
Well, here,
guillotine.
Yeah, but you know what? You know what you're doing there is. I'm not even talking about
two acceptable pronunciations.
One is wrong of the vowels. Yeah. It's the literally nuclear and nuclear. Those are spelled differently. Nuclear. There is no such word. It doesn't exist. It does not exist. And when you have people in power that are talking about nuclear weapons. I mean, they should know better, for Christ's sake.
You know what?
They don't need me to refudiate it. So, off.
It is part of the lexicon.
You know what? Just because you're ignorant and you mispronounce words doesn't mean that it's a new word. No, you're just a goddamn moron.
You know what?
That's
pisses
right.
Me
we
off?
Need we need to get back to some normalcy here.
You know what pisses me off about words though is popular words.
Did you just get that one, Dan?
I was laughing. You know what pisses me off about words?
Well, in the topic
of... What a strange thing to get maybe angry. I'm sorry, go on.
In the topic of words and vocabulary is these popular words that get introduced into our culture because they're popular.
Yeah.
But you know what? In 5 to 10 years, no one will say them. And then they get added to a dictionary. Mm-hmm. Muggle. In 10 years, no one will say the word muggle. I guarantee you no one will use the word muggle. Frack's not a f-ing word. Frack is a f-ing word. Frack is not a f-ing word.
Chad,
I
love you.
It's going to take you forever to watch.
That was the most immersion-breaking part of watching Battlestar Galactica was every time they said frack. Look, I understand on network TV you can't say f-ing. I get that. Just write around it like every other show does where people say get the hell out. Every time they said get the frack out, it's like, I am back in my living room.
Yeah. Anytime Robin someone Moore, changes a word you. Like that.
And I know he didn't even start it. It started in the original. But here's my thing.
That was Ike.
Within the geek culture, it is very popular for people to nitpick the pronunciation, the vocabulary, the diction, the grammar of other geeks. Every geek I talk to, and I'm painting with a broad brush here because it's not every geek, but a lot of geeks I talk to, they will go on this rant about how they hate how people use word this or that. And they hate how people misuse this particular adage or whatever. And they hate these particular grammatical errors. And it just drives them nuts. And they can't function in human society because people say that's taking it to a whole nother level. And another is not a real word. And yet in the post or speech or whatever, where they're ranting about this, I'll be picking out 10 errors they made.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I do this too, that I'll hear some errors that drive me crazy. And yet I myself have grammatical pronunciation and diction errors. And guess what? All of you people that love sitting there nitpicking and grammar Nazi and everyone else's post or trying to correct the exact etymology of the word or the exactly proper way to use a figure of speech. So many of us, myself included, have this built-in hypocrisy.
Why is pedantry so prevalent in geek culture? It's certainly not prevalent in baseball culture. They don't care.
Probably is just over difference.
Well, yeah, I mean, they have like the terminology might be, but
I have to say,
okay,
that's one thing.
I was at a Cardinals game, baseball game, not that long ago, and they had the ballots out for the All-Star game. Mm-hmm. And of course, to me, I don't care. I'm making pretty shapes with the bubbles.
Sure.
But you should have heard the debates going on around me.
And
it was as bad as any other.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's their thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Totally. Mm-hmm. But Batman's not on there, so what does it matter?
Exactly. Batboy was on there, but yeah.
It's a whole
different
concept.
I don't think I've ever caught myself doing that. I don't think I've ever caught myself calling anybody on anything. I have been annoyed after hearing Chad call El Magway El Magay, and then 2 minutes later correcting me on something.
What do I correct you on?
You correct me at work all the time. Not on work-related things. We'll be talking about something
cultural. I can't correct you on work-related things. No. You're so much better than I am.
Historical and cultural things. You do a lot of correcting on those.
You do.
You have to understand something. I'm not correcting anyone. I'm showing off.
That
makes it so much better.
Like me sitting here just a minute ago and saying I am completely hypocritical in this regard. Mm-hmm. I want to congratulate you for reaching my pedestal.
Yes.
You know, it's not that we're better than anyone else. We're just a lot more honest.
That's right.
It doesn't bother me whatsoever when someone pronounces a word wrong. It's when it's something intentional where people are twisting words or names of places.
To try and be cute.
And to try to be cute. And they say it every time, over and over. Like, each time's the first time anybody's ever heard this. Particularly, I knew someone that called White Castle Caucasian Palace. They would not refer to it as White Castle. They would not refer to Walmart as Walmart. Walmart was always Wally World.
Yeah. Target was... I like calling Target Target.
Target Boutique.
Target Boutique.
And I mean, the first time you hear it...
Jacques Penet.
The first time you hear it, you're sitting there trying to figure out, what are they talking about?
You know, my favorite one is one that my GPS did, because I use the male British voice for my GPS. And sure enough, we were coming back from Fear the Con 3. Me and John arrived in my car, and the GPS, I swear to God, says, you have arrived at Denae's. And I, from now on, all I do, I always call it Denae's.
That's horrible.
You know, one comment on both Pat and Wayne's point, honestly, don't move to Iowa. That was the biggest adjustment I had to make, is the way that they pronounce some of the towns in here. And they're dead on serious. New Delhi. You know, everyone else in the world pronounces New Delhi. Here, it's New Delhi.
Let me...
What?
I can go on.
Delhi?
On, go on.
What?
How the hell do they get an H in there?
You look at the word Sigourney. Here, it's pronounced... In the town is Sigourney. The word national is national. As far as... I mean, there's a town called National, Iowa.
Chris, let me paint a picture... A boot your hot dish.
This has nothing to do with Minnesota and the correct word usage of the word
so
hot dish.
Dirty.
Wow. No, so we're going after a pitcher and a boot. You know, I hear you, Chris, but it's not uncommon. I mean, the state southeast east of here is Arkansas, but what's the river called? It's the Arkansas River. Yes, the Arkansas River. Even though it's the exact
really?
Same word. Yes,
yeah,
you
know,
Arkansas
I've actually
river.
I
really?
Don't know
because I sure
people,
don't call it that.
I haven't heard people.
I mean,
call it
maybe
Arkansas
I'm
river.
Doing it wrong.
I've heard people call
I was
Arkansas.
Willing to let that go, but when I finally heard that there was a damn town called National,
the people of Arkansas, thank you for letting that one go. They're like, woo, yeehaw.
You know,
dodge
those,
that Chris Husson bullet.
Along those lines, my wife has a pet peeve of people calling Missouri Missouri.
Oh,
because there's no A at the end. It makes no sense.
Illinois.
Yes,
Illinois.
She does that. She intentionally calls it Illinois because she knows it bothers me, and because she says they all call this Missouri.
Well, she's just a mean-spirited woman.
But. That's right. She's just angry and bitter.
Missouri has a lot of Missouri-isms. Washington, Farty
yeah.
Far.
Yeah, let's turn on the BBC and hear idea.
That's sort of
yeah.
a southern thing.
I mean,
thing.
Where's the R in idea? You know, and of course, I'm sure they have equal number of things they mock us for.
Well, I mean, like, yeah, we
like
pronounce...
being Americans, for example.
We pronounce herbs.
Yeah.
Like, there's a silent H there. My mom drove that one into me, pronouncing it herb, because I pronounced it her. I pronounced it how it's spelt, herb. And she's like, no, it's herb. I'm like, a silent H? Are you insane?
What drives me nuts is the anhistorical as opposed to ahistorical.
I've never heard anhistorical.
It is properly anhistorical.
No, that is grammatically correct.
I know, you're right. It is properly anhistorical, but it just does not compute with me. It ought to be ahistorical. Because mm-hmm. if you have a history book, not an history book, but you have an historical figure, and it's completely stupid.
Yeah, that's true.
But
I think as long as you get the point across, as long as you can, I think that there's a difference between communicating and communicating correctly.
And also recognize with good humor that we're all hypocritical about this.
For me, it makes a big difference whether it's intentional or it's just... You know, if someone is mispronouncing the word because it's how they always pronounce it, how they learned it, I don't care. If they're doing it because they think they're cute, you're not cute. That's just my pet peeve.
Wow, all right. Using that as our rainbow chaser.
So the end lesson here, this whole podcast, is you're not cute. Mm-hmm. You're just not cute.
And
you know, and I don't get the farty far thing. That one always bothered me because when I was younger, I used to go to family bingo at McDonald's. Every Wednesday night, that's what I did.
McDonald's has family bingo?
Not anymore, but they did growing up in the town I came from.
Is that because you're a God-hating person?
No, they
didn't. Church like everybody else.
Okay, in the town you came from, sure, but...
So, maybe in Florida.
Basically, there's a lot of elderly people there, and every time they would say 44, someone, it didn't matter who was there that week, some elderly man would pop up and go, "Farty far!" It's like, why would you do that? It makes no sense.
Well, there's a ton of them with bingo. I-21? Not anymore, I ain't. Or, you sank my battleship.
Hey.
Before what?
So,
069.
So, do you know how to get a little old lady to say f***?
How?
Get two other little old ladies to say bingo.
All right. Well, this was a vastly pointless episode. But once again, bonus, get out there and check the blog throughout Gen Con. We'll be putting up all kinds of video and pictures, interviews, people we're talking to, stuff we're doing. And we will be back the week after Gen Con. We'll not be releasing an episode the week of Gen Con because we have a ton of other work we're going to be doing. But we'll be back the episode after Gen Con with a regular episode.
Hopefully not talking about Gen Con too much, because that's what everybody else is going to be doing.
I'm sure
I'll be timing it
somewhat inevitable, but we'll generally try to avoid it. So thank you guys for tuning in, and we will catch you next time.
Bingo! Party far!